Welcome to all the honorable members. Welcome to our colleagues from BPI. Always excited when we receive from the BPI. We know about the talks in the office where the countries, when you have to hear the parliamentarians and those people, they like to interrogate us. And you tend to do a good work in terms of responding to the engagement that we have with you. We're looking forward to having the same today. Honourable members, just in terms of our agenda, we're going to do the apologies, welcome and apologies, and the welcome. Then we're going to do the presentation. Then we will look at the minutes. There's two sets of minutes, and we'll speak to you when we get that. If time allows, honourable members, I have here what I have shared with you last week, the memoranda of agreement. There's very many of them. And only if time allows will I go through that, because it may take a few minutes of our time. With that agenda, I want to just check if we have any apologies. We are made to understand that Mikulakis, maybe you can speak for yourself, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yes, well, I'm still a member of the Security and Justice Cluster as well, but on request of the Chief Whip, it seems as if there are no other Free State members to take up this position, and the Free State needs to be represented on this committee. That is what the message that reached me was, and I agreed to take up that position in addition to my duties on the Security and Justice Cluster in order for the Free State Province to be represented. Security and Justice is not sitting today, so it is a pleasure for me to finally be able to come and join you, and thank you very much as well for making me feel fairly welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I want to draw your attention to Rule 154B, which might be a bit problematic for us. The rule says that every party in the council is allowed to have a representative and select committees proportionally. And there's a difficulty with the proportionality. I'm only mentioning it. I will raise it with the chief so that we do not compromise the rules of.
Chairperson, if I may, I did take it up with him. It was a concern of mine too. However, he did request, so I'm simply following that request. Thank you very much.
Let's not discuss it, but because you are responsible for members, you are allowed to speak. Not as a member of the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to give an advice. Maybe you should go and talk to the Chief Whip, and because from the Eastern Cape we have tourists, then they can take one out. and then they gave me halaki sugar.
No way.
You got it all wrong.
I do agree with you on the proportionality. I definitely agree with you. So proportionality, that comes into play. Yes, the DA already got 54% of local government fiscal fund as well. So I believe that should be quite a good thing.
You're already running 54% on national fiscal.
Okay.
Yes.
To our support staff,
very good to have you here.
I don't know whether the other committees have the luxury that we have, where we have support staff that's really spoiling the members. Thank you very much. We do notice that with appreciation. To our colleagues from the DTI, if you do help yourself with the food, you don't
have to turn me out of this committee.
Right. I always feel terrible. I know you are not like us who slept here, we got up, we don't have breakfast, we come and have our first meal here. But you're welcome to join us. What is me? I am using that to try and introduce you to the house. What we'll do with the members, maybe we, because you already know the Honorable Mikilakis now, you'll do what we are going to do now. Us starting with our delegate from the Eastern Cape, that we introduce ourselves in that way. That's right, Eastern Cape. Then you go this
way. Why are you starting with me? I'm in the middle and I'm getting left.
Good morning, colleagues. My name is Vusi Magwebo from the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Willem Farben and I represent the Northern Cape province.
Morning. My name is Brenda Matebula. I'm from Limpopo province.
Thank you, Chairperson. And good morning. I am Masipa Kodikhande. I represent Limpopo province.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everybody. My name is Hai. I represent the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Stephen Kilene. I'm from Comfort.
And I'm Eddie Mapuwe from the province of Gauteng.
Good morning, everybody. Ismail Hussain from PMG.
Morning, I'm Vuyiswa Papu. Saving the honor of the table from my home.
There's a particular protocol that you follow as well, but let's do it in the way we see it.
Good morning, thank you, Chair. My name is Edward Mamalise. I'm the Chief Executive of NRCF.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Tandi Pele. I'm from the Industrial Development Division of the DTI.
Good morning, Honorable Members. I'm Senge Demana from the DTI.
Good morning, Members. I am Macy Kass from the NRCS. Or National Regulator for Convergence Certification.
Good morning, Honorable Members. I'm Edward Matemba from the NRCA.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the presentation slides that you have shared with us well in advance. We note that as appreciation. We notice only 20 slides, so we anticipate that you would have enough time to go through. Normally we give you like an hour, and then after that the members will be in cluster raising questions to you, and you can then decide who within the entity answers those questions. We are being joined by
thank you, Honorable Chair.
Good morning again. The papers of today, we have been asked to make a presentation on the role of the NRCS in promoting coordinated and accelerated implementation of government economic vision priorities. The theme of the presentation will cover the background, our input to the National Development Plan, our input to the Industrial Policy Action Plan, and lastly, overview of our strategic outcomes. Starting with the background, the 1st September 2018 will mark a decade since NRCS was formed. NRCS was formed in September 2008 as a result of preparation from South African Bureau of Standards. Having undertaken the research, commonly known as QAM, the DPI decided to follow the recommendations of QAM and establish NRCS as a separate entity. The mandate is to promote public health, safety, environmental protection through development of technical regulation or compulsory certification. We derive our mandate from four principal legislations: the National Regulator of Compulsory Certification Act, the 5 of 2008, which is our constituting legislation. We also administer the Legal Metrology Act of 2014 in respect of metrology, health, and protection of environment. We also administer the National Building Regulations and Building Standards Act of 1977. The Act is currently under review. As you can see, the Act was promulgated about 40 years ago. Three, constitutional dispensation. So the Act is currently under review, but our role in terms of that Act is to ensure uniform understanding of the National Building Regulation and Standard Act. The implementation of the Act itself lies with the municipalities. We also have a delegated mandate in terms of the Foodstuff, Cosmetics and Disinfection Act of 1972. The Act is administered by the Department of Health, but they have delegated us in respect of certain food mandate. We'll come to that later. Our vision is to become a credible and respected regulator for commercial specification and fair trade. Our mission is to protect South African citizens by developing compulsory specification and maximizing compliance thereof. Overview of our strategic outcomes. Our strategy is underpinned by four themes. Firstly, we aim to ensure optimally capacitated institutions. We aim to inform, educate our stakeholders about the work that the NRCS does. And in the core, we aim to develop and maintain and administer compulsory specifications and technical regulations. Lastly, to maximize compliance of. We have compartmentalized ourselves into six main industries that we play a role in as a regulator. Firstly, the automotive sector. We regulate vehicles, replacement components. We are also an inspector of manufacturers, importers, and builders of motor vehicles. We have a chemicals, materials, and mechanicals division, which regulate commodities such as cement, chemicals, detergents, protective devices, soft tissue, building materials, treated timber, plastic, glass, solar heaters, flooding, and plumbing equipment. We also have an electrotechnical department, which deals with electrical appliances, products, and electronic appliances, as well as products. We have food and associated industry, which regulate fishery products, canned meat, and processed meat. Legal metrology department is responsible for calibration of measuring instruments, measurements, and gaming equipment. Building regulations, as I said, we aim to promote the uniform interpretation and understanding of the National Building Standards Act. How do we align to government policy? As an entity within the DTI, we form what the DTI termed infrastructure group of entities. That will include ourselves, FANAS, NENISA, and SABS. The NRCS, as part of that group, gives effect to outcome 4 of the National Development Plan, which talks to decent employment, inclusive economic growth, and outcome 11, which talks to creating a better South Africa and contribute to a better and safer Africa and the world. We also play an active role in the implementation of the Industrial Policy Action Plan. This is a policy of government. It's not the policy of the DTI. Although it's fitting within the DTI, as the champion, it is supposed to be across all government spheres. In terms of the IPEP, the inputs that we make inputs in agro-processing, we focus on science, land to science, fresh olive oil, canned meat, live agriculture, oysters, canned fish products, live rock, lobsters, and processed meat. We also implement energy efficiency regulations on household appliances. Aim to strengthen South African technical infrastructure in order to support the government initiatives in industrial development. We also aim to strengthen the enforcement of existing and new mandatory standards that support the IPEP. What enables us to achieve what we our objective? We collaborate with other government entities, like your customs, that is a division within SARS, in terms of facilitating trade at the borders. Over 3 years ago, the NRCS has adopted the border enforcement strategy. Although our act is not specific in terms of us being at the border, we adopted that as a strategy to enable us to focus our resources where they are needed most. The aim of us being at the borders is to ensure that we lock out non-compliant products before they can enter the market. In that process, we work closely with the customs, because they are there 24/7, whereas we are only there 8 to 4 during the weekdays. So we have a working relationship in terms of they know which products are regulated by us. Whenever they stop a confinement and it contains products that are regulated by the NRCS, they will alert us so that we can do the border inspection. We also participate in regional and continental and international engagements aimed at harmonizing regulation and adoption of international standards where possible. I've already indicated that we have a delegated mandate from Department of Health in terms of the Food, Bath and Cosmetics Act, in terms of which we have been delegated as a competent authority for fishery exports to foreign markets, especially the EU and the Far East. We utilize information technology as a tool to enable us to discharge our mandate. We also adopted the risk-based approach, which enables us to also focus our resources and our attention where it is needed most. In terms of the risk-based approach, we are able to categorize products that we regulate in terms of lower risk, high risk, and medium risk. As I've indicated, we work closely with the customs in terms of the profiling of the containers at the port of entry. We collaborate with other government entities. I've already mentioned SARS, but there are many other government departments that we work with in discussing our mandate. We work with the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Health within the food environment. SARS I've spoken about. We also work with the Department of Environmental Affairs in terms of regulations of plastic bags in the protection of our environment. We are also delegated as the Inspectorate of MIDs by the Department of Transport and also implement energy efficiency regulations for household appliances on behalf of the Department of Energy. Our regional and international bodies that we participate in include South African Development Communities, where we participate in we are also a member. We are also a member of the International Organization of Legal Metrology, OIML. We membership on behalf of South Africa as a country. We also participate in the food space through CODEX. We adopt international guidelines on food safety. And lastly, we participate in AfriMed, and we are also co-founders of the AfriMed group, which aims to harmonize technical regulations within the African Union. Our operational focus, I have spoken about our strategy that we have adopted few years ago, which helped us to focus our inspections and our resources at the borders, where we know that the products will be coming through our borders, we intercept them before they can infiltrate the market with substandard and non-compliant goods. We have concluded an MOU with ShopRite Checker, which is part of our risk-based approach, in terms of which we encourage self-compliance by the retailers. So this is a pilot project that we have started with ShopRite Checker, and we hope to move it to other retailers. We issue market approvals focusing on improving efficiency. We issue letters of authority before a person can import any electrical appliances that we regulate. They need to get a letter of authority from us. If you do not have a letter of authority, we will stop the consignment. You will not be able to sell it before you can get authorization to do so by the NRC Act. We also issue regulatory compliance certificates for 6 electrical installations, letters of compliance for gaming equipment, the payout machines, like the gaming organization use. We homologate those gaming equipment before they can be used. We issue type approval for measuring instruments that is in the legal metrology space. And lastly, we issue homologation certificate for all motor vehicles. The current project that the NRCS is currently embarking on to improve efficiency and effectiveness within the organization, we have adopted a modernization project. The modernization project is a suite of multiple interventions, technological interventions, to improve efficiency. We aim to automate our inspections and approval process. We also aim to interlink with other government departments through technological platforms, especially the risk profiling that FARS use. We also want to integrate our support systems like your HR, your finance, so that they can talk to each other and create more accessibility for our external clients and stakeholders. Lastly, our performance highlights from 2017 and 18 financial year. We have conducted about 48,885 inspections. In terms of the demarcation per business unit, you will see that the food is leading the queue there with 27.3 inspections. I'm not going to go through all of them, but you can just see how each business unit is performing in terms of the inspections. In terms of the approvals, we have issued 11,411 approvals, which constitute 81% of all approvals issued within 120 days. In terms of the gaming approvals, we have issued 785 gaming approval certificates, which represent 77%. In terms of the impact, we have removed non-compliance or substandard products from the market to the value of 259.1 million. This is the contribution by each business unit. You can go through that at your leisure time. I thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, we don't have.
Thank you. Honourable members, we will follow the normal procedure where we take a few hands at each time. I am saying a few answers because I listen to how many questions you have to start. Notably, Honorable Faber, any other help? Honorable.
You must remember me, please.
I wanted to go to Masangu first, but no, let me do you first, Masangu.
We'll
take Mahuevu and then we'll take Masangu. There will
be next round.
Sorry? Okay, let's take the three and then we'll see how many questions we have. Please, Honorable Father, start.
Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, mine is definitely just a part of clarity that I need. You know, we had DTI last week coming to us, and the presentation was made by the Tripartite Free Trade Area, FTA, if you could remember. And they were telling us about how they look at sand, especially it was told to us by the presenter that, for instance, grandpa is substandard. When it comes, they picked up that grandpa is substandard. And I asked the speaker if it was not the job of the medical board to test medicine, because they also apparently test it. Now, the NRCS, SABS, FDA, the port import control, I need to start getting clarity. We've got so many of these institutions looking at quality. Are you guys all standing there next to this container when it comes out and you like draw sticks to see who's going to do what? Because I must be quite honest, we're getting confused here. It seems like you are so many entities controlling that I really start to think, Chairperson, we should start to look at this. You know, we've had a few of these departments that came to us through trade and industry that is regulating quality. And there should be a specific guideline. Because I can tell you these are overlapping here. Definitely overlapping. Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe they can just clarify this one.
Yeah, just one brief clarification of the channel. When the presenter during the TFT inspection asked me that we was meant to be the DTI and not necessarily. That group is dealing with the so the we in that instance was DTI. I know the GFTA does not. Honorable Mahuevu. But you are welcome to answer the question because it's a bigger component. How do we cooperate with those other departments of government?
Yes, because they are a lot of
in order to avoid duplication. Honorable Mahuevu.
Thank you, Sir President. I'll refer to this slide quickly. Slide number 9. Stakeholders, I just want to find out how do you really take, you know, your mandate or to general stakeholders? I'm not sure, when I talk general stakeholders, I'm talking to the public at large, not the government institutions, where it's easy to access them. But what I'm thinking of an ordinary man in the street who would want to report or have reasons to believe that there's a defective product that is being sold in the local community. Because I don't seem to have heard you on radio, on television, or I don't seem to be, you guys to be doing a lot of outreach and noise to say this is who we are, this is what we do, this is how we do that. Maybe I'm missing something, let me know, or we have problems in doing that, because you seem to be locked in somewhere. I don't know. That's the first slide. Slide number 16, if you please. Yeah, 16. Now, you say here, amongst the things you do through your strategy, let's talk about the inspections, for instance, and pre-market approval. Now, I just want to give you a hypothetical situation. When you talk about market approval, I thought I heard you saying that you issue letters of authority. So it means before the product is imported, that person must have had a letter of authority from you guys. Now, can you explain to me, you know, just break it down the process?
when he gets the letter of authority, what is it that he must do? He must bring the product to you first to say, this is the product I intend to import into the country. Then perhaps you certify it or you check the compliance standard of that. If it's a product ideally that must be brought into the country, and then you issue that person with the letter of authority. When he goes to China, he starts there, you know, purchasing and bring that because he's got a letter of authority. Or, because if you do that, then my worry will be, there is something, there's something that people keep saying to us as public representatives, that, you know, these institutions are being, misled or fooled by entrepreneurs. They bring the product to say, this is the water I want to sell. You test it, you take it through the process and through the thing, you certify it as compliant. Then you give him an approval. Then he starts, manufacturing defective water, millions and millions, and sell them on the basis that he's got authorization. So they're calling him. Because not every bottle of water comes to your hands every day. So because one water was tested in the lab, and then he said, yeah, you can sell it, and then suddenly he's got this pre-approved or letter of authority you folks issue, then he starts doing a substandard water, and that's the worry. And I want you guys to comment on that, because regarding the flood problem. Right now on social media, I came across something, I don't know how far it is, but it's recent, I think other colleagues have seen that up as well, where you get that it's a tin of pilchard inside these baked beans, or inside this nonsense, but somebody is getting this stuff. I don't know whether it's coming out of the country or they're being manufactured internally, but there is a lot of, fraudulent and toxic products that may be in the market today. And I would want you to comment on that and see if you are aware of that and what's the response. And finally, slide number 19. Now, in your operations, you're talking about you do things in various ways. And again, I want to focus on inspections because this is where my worry is. You're doing all these inspections, you're giving us all the figures, which we appreciate. But I would want to know, how do you then, because they're doing a whole lot of things, chemicals, industrial, automotive, how do you certify these products? Do you have your own engineers, or you in-house, or you're working with other stakeholders to say, look, this is the automotive products that will be, or someone intends to import chemical, a product one wants to import. How do you do all of this? Because you need various skills. I'm looking at the broad spectrum of products you're covering, and I'm wondering, are they in, those expertise, are they in half and half, or you saw them somewhere, and if somewhere is what? Just give us a picture so that we can know exactly what is going on. And lastly, on non-compliance, you're talking about the money that you have saved, $259 million of goods that non-compliant that we're able to stop before they went to the market. Commendable. But I just want to find out, my understanding would be, and I'll tell you if I'm wrong, this is, when you talk this $259 million, you're talking about the value of the product. That is, this is potential loss that the country could have suffered if these goods were to go to the market. So, because you quantified them to say, had we not been there to block these goods, coming to this amount. So it's not a fiscal that came to the state, but it's just, you quantified, the products that were posing a risk, but you were able to affect that risk. Is my analysis and my understanding correct? I want to hear you on that. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Chair. Well, we are South Africans. We do understand that we have diverse of languages. Sometimes we cannot pronounce our own sentence correctly. So we must acknowledge that. But nevertheless, let me, I don't know, Chair, whether can I speak my language, but I can see we can abandon Basemia Basekayala. Lana Funukbuza, man. One, in around your regional integration, I heard you speaking about SADC, that you only also working in SADC. My concern, I'm very curious here to know around your economic community forum, your economic communities forums that we have in Africa, as you are working with the region. wish perhaps one that you usually network with. The other one, the issue of stakeholders, I think I'll go back to what Honorable Mukwakwembu has said. I'm also curious, I just want to know what formula or method do you use in outreaching our people, in doing community outreach? How many have you done so far? In which areas? Because we're here representing provinces. We may really appreciate to know when we was that done in our provinces. The third one, Chair, I think we're all aware that there is an emergence of these small sponsor shops that are owned by foreign nationals. What is happening there? You can go there and you ascertain yourself that most of the products that are being sold there are not usually products that we are aware of in South Africa, and most of them they're not even having what you call a barcode, South African barcode. How do you reach that level in terms of your inspection? Because those things are already there in the street, and they are being sold to our people. Yeah. I'll just conclude there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you
very much.
My apologies. I'm looking at you and I say Mampu Malanga.
No, I hate life. Mampu Malanga.
And you can get your colleagues to come in whenever
you feel. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members, for all the comments. I think let me start with Honourable Isid Makwebu.
Makwebu.
Your comment on how we do stakeholder engagement. We have a stakeholder engagement strategy that has been approved by the NRCS. In terms of our strategy, we run a consumer awareness workshops where we educate our consumers about the kind of work that we do. We also have a complaint procedure in terms of where the complaints can be lodged, where any member of the public discovers that there are substances or non-compliant products that we regulate. We must just remember that as the NRCS, we don't regulate each and every product. Our mandate is informed by developing a compulsory standard focusing on specific goods which are likely to pose a risk to the health and safety of our citizens. So that is the premise from which we move as the regulator. Any person can submit a request to us to say, I see this product, it has a potential to cause harm to the public. Can you regulate? We'll do a feasibility assessment and risk assessment, and ultimately make a decision whether we want to regulate a particular product or not. So our regulation is risk-based in a way. So we don't regulate every product that you find in the spaza shop or in the retail shop or of our streets anyway. There are specific products that we regulate.
Okay.
And for those products, that's where we focus when we do our community outreach programs. I think there is a particular one that we do with the minister. The minister is very passionate about the an awareness campaign on paraffin stoves. Paraffin stoves is one of the products that we regulate because of the potential of this commodity causing fires, especially in the informal settlement. We have collaborated with the department, I think it's the Department of Environmental Affairs and COCTA, where we arrange various outreach programs in the informal settlement communities. The minister is normally there to attend those outreach programs. We educate our consumers about the safety elements of the paraffin stove, because there are a lot of these backyard products that has potential, huge potential of causing fires, and we educate them, and they are cheaper. Obviously, the more the product is substandard, the lesser the price is. So we need to educate our consumers about the safety elements to say that don't focus only on the price, focus on the safety of this component. You spoke on slide 16 on the inspection, especially the letter of authority. How does it work? How do we ensure that we don't fall into the trap of a golden product or golden fumble, if you can say that? Part of our mandate is to ensure that once we have issued a letter of authority, we do random inspection as a follow-up intervention. We also do a random sampling and testing of products ourselves. So that intervention helps us to mitigate the risk of having a golden sample being approved and subsequent abuse of the approval by producing substandard goods. The process of issuing a letter of authority itself is intense, but as a regulator, we have a conformity assessment policy. In terms of our conformity assessment policy, we accept a test report from an accredited laboratory. So in certain instances, we also take a sample before we can even issue a letter of authority, especially in the automotive sector. We do the inspection and then approval. In the area of food, the risk is almost negligible. It's not there. And we have resident inspectors situated at manufacturing plants who inspect every batch that is being produced before a certificate can be issued. So there is a process that we follow in terms of issuing a letter of authority and making follow-up inspections to ensure that we are not given a golden sample and we are happy to issue a letter of authority and a person can do as they wish. The letter of authority only helps an importer to have smooth facilitation or movement of goods at the border of entry. It's like your passport. When you have your passport, you are free to move across the border. But if you commit crime, there will be other interventions that will stop you. So the letter of authority just enables you that, okay, we have given you authority to import a bottle of water, import it. When it gets to the border, you produce the authority to import that water, they will release it. But we will still follow up with the inspection. That's not the end of it. The product, I think I've partly answered the question on the product that you see on the Spaza shop, the counterfeit goods that are doing rounds in the social media. Firstly, let me be clear that we don't regulate counterfeit goods. The Counterfeit Goods Act is administered by the South African Police Service. However, having said that, where we notice that there are products that we regulate and are being sold as non-compliant or substandard, that's where we would intervene. As a follow-up on what we have picked up on the social media, so we have established a task team to attend to this particular issue. Because it's not our problem alone as the regulator. We have to involve other departments like SAPS, NCC, National Consumer Commission, and Customs. We have established a task team, and we are planning to do a raid focusing on this unscrupulous suppliers or retailers or buffer shops, if you may call them that. So we are planning to do something about it. We are not just ignoring it because we are not regulating everything. We have picked up that some of our products are included in that sphere. So we will be doing inspections, focus inspections with other authorities to ensure that we arrest this problem before it becomes a virus. You ask whether we had the in-house expertise or whether we outsource some of these inspections and certification process. We employ a team of professionals. Hence, I said that we compartmentalize ourselves into various sectors of the industry. In each sector that we play a role, in automotive, you will have specialists, all our inspectors in that area have a professional qualification, engineering qualification in automotive. Equally, similarly, in all other areas, we have electrical engineers, we have chemical engineers, and we are, I think we do have internal expertise. I think tied to that, the fact that we don't do the testing ourselves, I've spoken about the conformity assessment policy that informs our work. So we also rely on other infrastructure entities that I've mentioned, like the SABS, in terms of testing. We rely on the testing capacity of the SABS to ensure that the products are indeed compliant. We also rely on farmers in terms of accreditation of our laboratories. Okay. The value you asked me to confirm if your analysis is correct. Yes, indeed it is correct. The value that we have stated is in relation to the value of the substandard product that we have removed from the market. It could have been sold. In other ways, we spoke of fair trade as part of our mandate. Mm. We encourage fair competition because if we don't remove this non-compliant product, they are sold cheaper, they are not safe, and they have a potential of running out the compliant ones out of the market because it's not a fair competition. If I sell fake water, we sell it 2 rand. The proper still water will cost a little bit more. So it means that me, as a compliant industry, I'm likely to lose out. Honorable Baba, you said they are overlaps. I will differ with that analysis because for me the issue that we have is fragmentation and modern overlapping. You must understand that SABS is not a regulator. We only have one national regulator in the country, which is the NRCS. And the mandate, we've spoken about the mandate of the NRCS. The mandate of the NRCS is safety, is premised upon safety, health, and protection of environment. It has nothing or little to do with quality of the product. So we don't necessarily regulate quality. Although some of the standards will have elements of quality in it, but that's not our primary focus. Our primary focus, as I said, to ensure that our citizens are protected against harmful goods and substandard products. Honorable Mchanga, you said, why don't we participate in other economic structures? We, as a regulator, obviously we have to focus on relevance. We identify similar bodies like us who have common mandate or intentions. So for us to participate in each and every committee that is not relevant to our mandate, I think it would be a wasteful spending of our resources. Mm. We operate under constrained circumstances, and we strive to target those entities that are relevant and will contribute to our mandate. Your last question was on the outreach programs. I have touched on that and the barber shops. I think I have answered. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Tanga, I think it's answered. Let me say that we are all with the awareness, and we are mindful for your constraints, but we think that will help us if the ordinary person is not aware of what they can get from it. And we would want to appeal to you, as we are dealing with to many other entities that are reporting to us. Look at what more could be done in order to increase your outreach campaigns. Look at local radio stations, the local newspapers, and things like that. If I can just give you two examples of the problem that we have there. You mentioned the thing of the paraffin stoves. But we have seen people continue to die.
Mm.
In my own constituency, just last week, Monday, there was a fire. Three people died, 300 shacks destroyed. And we say, but you were there. I'll raise my question about it later on, but we're saying if this young, underpaid person goes to a shop that they sell these cheap paraffin stoves, you can't be there all the time. We can't be there all the time. It would help you if these people know that we can communicate with our NCS. And we can take these things out of those shops. Because the point that is raised about the spider shops also is that what happens is that these people have ways in which they bring these low standard goods into the country. And we need to not assume that people are using things only because it's cheap and they're not worried about safety. But many people don't know what the risks are. But if there is a clever person in the community, they will report that. Also, just the second element to that, you see, you did not tell us about the workshops that you're doing with the municipalities, because those are the people that are there on the ground. If they know these things, they will be better able to assist you in doing it. And we do our oversight. When we do oversight, we don't hear people talking about the NRCS and how you have helped them. Because they like bragging about the successes that they have. But there's no successes in this dimension. That doesn't mean that you are not doing your work, but it says that there is room for it. Let's have the next round of hands. The Honorable Dihale was up earlier. Are you still on, Honorable Dihale? Then let's have the Honorable Matevula, and then we'll have the Honorable Chai, and then I will close up. So we'll take all four in one round. Honorable Dihale.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and let me take this opportunity first and thank the presenter for a well-prepared presentation. Most of my questions were touched by my colleague from the Eastern Cape, Honorable Magoyo. I won't repeat them. I want to talk to page 14, where you mentioned that one of your functions is to regulate plastic bags. So I really want to raise this concern that maybe you need to go deeper in your thinking or planning, and see to it that you see what you can do with the plastic bags, because it's still a challenge. Well, on the ground, under the trees, it's much better, because the ANC, the government, is taking care of the ground. There are people always that are picking up all those plastics. But when you pass the dams and the rivers, those plastics are still challenged in the river. Papa, please give me a chance. On page 12, you are mentioning the main aim of the National Development Plan, that we need to have or see the decent employment through inclusive economic growth and outcomes, and also that you are mentioning that the National Development Plan says we need to create a better South Africa and contribute to a better and safer Africa and world. But then my mind went to this department whereby we have this entity that deals with lottery. Last time I was watching TV whereby millions of went to one person when they were spinning that lottery wheel. I don't remember the figure, but in my mind I said, what if the entities can, as they work in collaboration with each other, talk about this lottery money that goes to only one person. Maybe we can take all those 100 million and improve our industrial policy action and try to create some jobs, rather than we have one person taking the whole lot of all the people who are playing lottery. I don't know whether I am clear to the presenter. And Honorable Mthanga, I want to touch on the issue that you raised. So they are saying they don't deal with counterfeit goods. But I still have trust in this department and this entity, that if you can do something, we can be able to prevent this. Last time there was a video that was circulating in our WhatsApp. I don't know, and even in the Facebook, yeah. I don't know whether it's true, but I was so surprised to see that the bread, type of bread that you're buying in our smaller shop, they don't get rotten, and when you put it in a glass of water, they turn into a sponge. And then you ask yourself as to what is it that this thing are doing in the stomach of our ordinary people who are not working on the ground, because those are the people who are being, well, they are being targeted by this smaller shop in our community. Because as we are working, we know that we will go to Woolworths, we'll buy good bread, we'll go to ShopRite, we'll go to Spa, we'll go to all these different shops that are selling good quality. But those who are not working, or those who are depending on the trend, Yavana, those are the people who go and buy in those shops because they can afford to buy those type of things. Then, if we can do something, we can be able to also assist them. Because if we can have industries all over, even in our villages, these people will be able to work, get employment, and they'll be able to get something month end, and they will know where to buy good food. So I still have to repeat myself. I have trust in this department and in their entity. So what we need is that you do something. Talk to each other and assist us. You see, when I see some, I see people who are getting a lot of money from us every year. Sometimes, if I don't know how they calculate their things, but you find that they say I'm owing 200,000, and they will take that money every month without even negotiating with me. And at the end of the day, I ask myself, where do they take this money? So maybe we need to put all this money into one pot and use, including the lottery money that one people will then get at the end of the day. I believe all of us here, except me, play lotto every day.
No.
Okay.
I don't gamble.
It's fine. It's fine, but there are those who are faithful. It's not gambling. To me, lotto is not gambling. It's assisting the community.
Don't have the dialogue. Don't engage in that way. These people maybe don't check
honorable Jefferson, because when you move around, you see lottery funded the project for the vulnerable people and often. That is why I'm saying not have a friendly with assisting the community. So if we can really come together and talk about all these plans that are happening. SAR, I give an example of lottery. Maybe we can be at the end of the day be able to assist our people with the correct employment, whereby they will be able to get the correct salary. Even if you don't have correct salary, even myself, I'm wondering when are they going to increase mine, because petrol and everything is going up. Thank you, Chairperson.
I just want to rule the matter on SARS and the loss of it. Sneak in, right? Consider it, as the Honourable Member said, merely as examples. Don't go into the details on the SARS and not that. Look at the monies that are being made generally and how you deal with that. Don't go into SARS.
Just as on a lighter note, the Honourable Member can rest assured that the VAT on a whiskey pays for building schools as well.
I never could understand why I enjoy
it. It's not drinking.
Oh, no, Matagula, just said, madam.
I hope all of you understand.
Stronger. 2 minutes, Matagula, everybody.
No, we don't have earphones. Yeah.
We don't have earphones. 1 minute. My question is very simple and straightforward. You say you go to and educate stakeholders. I wanted to check with you whether you go to the rural areas and what measures are you using to popularize your number, that each and everybody knows that if you encounter a certain fake good, you can call him. And then number two, there is one product that I'm worried about, that I think it will be the second time I raise it, the issue of condoms, which is used by our poor people at the ground. At least the rich one can go and buy, but poor people at the ground, they choose condoms. Previously, the SABS said they didn't approve choice products and choice condoms. And choice condoms are all over hospitals, everywhere we are using it. So I just wanted to check with you whether are you aware of these choice condoms? Obvious, of course, there are chemicals that will be used to make those condoms. And you can laugh, but it's very important. And it can cause danger to our people who are using it, more especially poor people. Those one who are laughing here, they can be able to go to the shop and buy. But what about our poor people at the ground?
You mean those laughing on your left here?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Honorable
No, thank you. Thank you, sir. I just wanted to clarify first the statement that was made by the Honourable Father, specifically that he has left the meeting on the issue of the standards of frame power. This was an example that was made in the presentation. Not that all frame powers now are substandard, but the presenter informed us that this is what they look for when goods come from outside the country, and make an example of the grandpa. Not that all grandpa now, that statement could be misleading. Now people will stop buying grandpa thinking that it's substandard. Yeah. But also I'm glad that you clarify your mandate as well, because we were to now ask again more on the quality rather than on the issues of safety, health, and environmental protection. But also, sometimes you may not differentiate between safety and quality, because something that is not of quality could also not be safe. You can buy something that is not of quality, but when you say you put it on, something happens in your food because of the quality of the product. So I don't know how you deal with that situation. I would have loved if you were to give us, instead of just numbers, with regard to the inspection on the sectors that you identify, if you
were to also not only numbers but also give us the outcomes of those inspections, the undertaking and the compliance by those involved. It would have been good so that we know exactly what is the outcome of those inspections. Also, given that at some stage, I mean, last year or 2 years ago, there was this issue of safety around Fort Kruger, for example. I don't know whether there is any role that you play there in terms of the inspection of such cars for the purpose of safety of those who buy such cars and also the environment. The last point is on the issue of your role, because the brief is around your role with regard to the National Development Plan. You indicated your role, for example, in terms of the outcome, that's one part, but also your role in the self-policy action plan, I thought. But you're not exactly saying what role you specifically play, except just to highlight those areas that you are involved in, like agro-processing, but without saying exactly what is your specific role in those areas. That you have highlighted there, agro-processing, focusing on the processing, and so forth and so forth, without specifically saying what is your role on those.
Yes. I would like to correct myself. Not trade condom, Max condom.
Thank you very much. Let me add. Let me comment first, and then I. The Honourable High raised the question about inspection. And he said, what has been the outcome here? Now, you have thousands of inspections. We're not asking you to do all of them. However, that becomes a question of detail and a question of... what's the term that you use in the house? Statistics. So we've asked you to give that to us in writing. Can we ask you to do the following? Give us 10 of your inspections where you've been successful, and give us 10 of your inspections where you've had challenges, if there are such. I'm sure you've had challenges with some of them, right? But you give that to us in writing. The next question that I have, when you say in writing, we expect you to give it to us within 14 days. Whatever it is. My first question is related to detail as well, so you can give it to me in writing. On page 7, you are talking about the National Building Regulations and the Building Standards Act, and I hear you saying that this basically falls under the municipality, those regulations, but it impacts on your mandate as well, or your mandate is informed by it, but then you also emphasizing that this is under review. Now, my question would be, can you give to us some of the areas of intervention on those two acts, the National Building Regulation and the Building Standards Act that you have done? Let me tell you why I'm raising the question. You've seen what happened with the standards of the houses that were built in Protea, part of Soweto, with the first home, the houses collapsed. We have gone out into the rural areas where we see the same thing. The standard of the RDT houses that are built in those areas leaves much to be desired. So we want to know, if you're reporting to us, what exactly is it in those regulations? That's first one. The second one is on the page 12. You talk about energy and water efficiency household appliance. Lots of people in our community, in our constituency, are complaining about the electricity grid. We've had accusations thrown around, particularly in Tswane, where you had a contractor and the meter that they installed is not up to standard. Many people are, I'm not making a value judgment on it, people are complaining that the new meters being installed run faster than the old meters. You pay more electricity. Can you tell us whether you have looked at the standards of the meters generally that are now being used by municipalities? My next question would be on page 16, where you're talking about the ShopRite checker, and you mentioned self-compliance. Now, members, remember last week in the when we were looking at trade, I raised this as something that was being developed some time ago in SAS I know of. Now, my understanding thereof is what happens, Checkers ShopRite has an MOU with you, which means that they commit themselves that they will not become engaged in trading in substandard goods. And therefore, if a truck comes in from Zimbabwe and the ShopRite checkers on it, you're not going to worry so much as when a truck comes in and it has Makuwe trading. Now, are there any other companies that you have that self-compliance agreement with? And are you able to share that MOU with us? I just find, that, help us understand this word, homologation. Even we speak Greek and Afrikaans, don't we?
No. Homologation.
I don't know. Homologation. Just help me to understand that. That's a simple one. And then my last question would be to say that...
Basically, 101.
No. That doesn't work for me. You on page 8 refer to fashion. Just help us understand what you're doing in the space of fashion. Because you see, fair trade is a broad term in the people doing dealing with trade. When you talk about knowing you're trading coffee, you must pay the correct price for the coffee. It is better to buy coffee from Ghana than what it is to buy coffee that is produced in Germany. Because don't go too long on any of the answers. Be as brief as you can. But the floor is yours.
Che. Sorry, Che. I don't know, I was just inferior because you made me inferior. My question was not properly answered, Chair. I didn't say they must just choose any structures to work with in, around the region. I was asking which particularly referred to SADC. Then within SADC, you have structures that are particularly targeting particular fields of operation. Now my question was to be satisfied which particular structures are they networking with in terms of compliance, quality compliance? Because in SADC we do have such structures. Thank you, Chair. I was just wanted to correct that.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members for the questions again. I see I will soon be talking to MP Chair. Honorable Lihali has asked a question. She left.
I
don't know
when
I should answer.
Leave the question.
I will skip that. The question. Honorable Matebula has asked a question on our outreach again, and I think the chair has summed it up very well that there is a room for improvement. Although there are interventions that we have been doing, and we are still doing, as we speak, I think our marketing division is somewhere in Malamulele, in Venda. I'm not sure where it is, but I know it's somewhere there in Limpopo. So yes, so we do outreach on rural areas in the cities, in the townships, but I think there is still a room for improvement, and also to look at other platforms. Media platforms, social media, and all that to improve our efficiency in terms of engagement with our stakeholders. The issue of Max condoms, I will defer that to Dr. Cheng from the DTI. Honorable Hai, we don't regulate grand park. Although the Legal Metrology Act that we have spoken about includes a certain elements of medical regulations, we haven't moved into implementation of the new Legal Metrology Act. We are still developing a plan to implement the new scope of the Legal Metrology Act, which includes health and the environment. I'm not sure, Dr. Cheng will also touch on the regulations, because we have just submitted the regulations to support the implementation of the Act. The DTI. The outcome of inspection, if I heard correctly, is that I must submit a written response.
Mm.
But just to submit the issue, our act gives us power to deal with non-compliant products. It empowers us to issue a directive, either to destroy the non-compliant product, to return it to the country of origin, or to recall it from the market. So those are the powers that have been given through the legislation. Whenever we find non-compliant products, this is how we should deal with it. So, in most cases, when we find these non-compliant or substandard products, those will be the outcome, the final outcome of the that the importer or the manufacturer will be forced to destroy at their own cost or return to the country of origin. The issue of Fort Kuka, just we, as I've indicated, we homologate motor vehicles before they are sold. Homologation, simply put, means we grant approval. It's just a terminology that we prefer to use to make a distinction between normal approval of products and a motor vehicle. The other thing we say we homologate the motor vehicle. A motor vehicle comprised of many components, but we only look at the critical components in the vehicle. And once we are satisfied that the vehicle, the model of the vehicle is safe, we will issue a homologation certificate, which means you can now manufacture that model of a vehicle and sell it to the market. So equally with the same Kuga, for Ford Kuga, we have done that. We homologated the vehicle, we issued them with the approval. Then we transpired so that the vehicle, the Ford Kuga, has a faulty coolant system. The coolant system is not among the components, safety critical components that we look at when we homologate the vehicle. So in that sense, it falls outside the scope of our mandate. Remember that the South Africa has no manufacturing capacity for vehicles. So the most of the standards, our standards, are not really in keeping with the international standards. Although we participate in the Working Party 29, which is an international body for vehicle regulation, we have not adopted all of the regulations produced by WP29. So we will be reviewing our compulsory specifications in the motor vehicle homologation, that deals with motor vehicle homologation, to include, to see if we can include other safety elements or components of a vehicle. Chair, you asked about the interventions in the area of National Building Regulations and Standard Act. The Act, as I've said, our mandate in terms of that Act was to deal with the review cases from municipalities to us as the appeal or review body. But then the Constitutional Court recently declared that particular section unconstitutional, which means that we can no longer perform that mandate. Hence, we spoke up about the review of the Act as a whole, because there are problematic sections in terms of that Act that have already been declared unconstitutional. What is left of us is to promote uniform understanding or interpretation of the Act. But the implementation of the Act itself lies with the municipalities. Things like approval of plans, building quality of buildings, those are with the municipalities. It's not our mandate. You spoke of energy efficiency with specific reference to electrical meters. Again, this is an area that is covered in terms of the new Legal Metrology Act. This is an area that we are planning to regulate. We haven't regulated. There is no compulsory standard for electrical meters, but it's one of our priority projects. When we start with the implementation, we will be looking into that area. The MOU with ShopRite, we can make that available. Your analysis is correct. The aim of the self-compliance is to encourage self-regulation within the industry. So ShopRite has committed that they will not sell any non-compliant products in their stores across the country. and they have also committed that whenever we find anything that is not compliant, they will immediately remove it from their shelves. We don't have, as I said, it's a pilot project. We don't have any similar MOUs with any other organization or body. It is a pilot project that we have just concluded, I think, late last year, and we still piloting the project and see what are the pros and cons. Once we have learned from the implementation of that particular MOU, we will then extend it to other companies and interested parties. The fair trade element of our mandate talks to leveling of the playing field. So what we are saying is that if we are dealing with a regulated product, it must comply with a same standard. So we don't want a situation where substandard products compete with quality products in the market, which are regulated by us. It also talks to the issue of fair measurements in the metrology sphere. If I purchase this water, it says 500 milliliters, we must make sure that what you get is 500 milliliters. Otherwise, somebody will be selling the same bottle written 500, but the content is not 500 milliliters. I'll hand over to Dr. Dimana to answer some of the questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'll just deal with the questions that were answered. I don't know how. Maybe I should start with the mic condom. The mesh condoms that are on the shelves or that are being distributed by Department of Health currently are approved by the FDA. So those condoms, under normal circumstances, if used correctly, they won't leak and they will be the right size. Those tests are done per batch. So the batch has to be tested and approved. So if it's not approved, it won't be given over to the Department of Health to put on in the toilet and everywhere else. So the ones that are out there are actually, they're fine. They have been tested and found to comply. I think the other issue that was raised was that in the area of quality and standards, there's a whole lot of overlap. Maybe the way I can answer that is that there are three key areas of focus when it comes to quality and standards. You have the first part has to do with the fact that the measurements that we use here must be the same measurements that are used across the globe. So you will have people who focus on just the measurements to make sure that the measurement that we use in South Africa is equivalent to the measurement systems that are used elsewhere. So if we take the half a liter of water that we have to make sure that half a liter of water measured in Cape Town is the same in Durban, is the same in Beijing. And so you have to have that kind of system that is equivalent across the board. So in South Africa, the people who are responsible for that are called the National Metrology Institute of South Africa. Then the next group or the next focus area will be the area where people come together and agree that for a product, there will be minimum requirements that will have to be met. So they will document that minimum requirement as a standard. So in South Africa, of course, we have the South African Bureau of Standards. So industry, consumer groups, academics, and all interested parties will come together and say, if we have a draft and we call it a medium, this is the measurement that we're talking about. So after that has been done, then somebody else is able to measure that documented standard. It's able to either do a test or inspect using that standard. And that is what we call conformity assessment. So you will have all these testing houses, including the SABS, that will do the test to following a given standard that they have. So that work will be more or less supervised or overseen by another body, which is the accreditation body. And again, we have what we call the South African National Accreditation System. They will be the one who go to the various laboratory inspection houses, test houses, and make sure that the equipment that is there and the personnel that is there is able to do those tests. So they give the confidence that everybody who's working in that space knows what they're doing. And then we have regulators. When it comes to regulators, we have a lot of regulators. The Department of Health, for instance, is also a regulator. They regulate medicine. So when we talk about Grandpa, if it's being sold, that means it has been approved by the Medical Control Council of South Africa. So it will be safe to use because it has been approved. So we have our regulator here with us today that reports to the DTI, but it's not the only regulator. For cars, for instance, you also have the Department of Transport. They are proof that cars can be, they are safe to be driven on the road. And we know about the testing stations and the problems that they have had in the past. So the system is all-encompassing because it has to deal with economic fulfillment, it has to deal with health, it has to deal with taxes. So you can't, in that sense, you can't have one person being responsible for all this work, because therefore that person will then become a regulated player, and you can't really have efficiency. And you don't want somebody who is doing taxes to be the same person who is telling you whether you are sick or not. So that's why it's divided into specific areas. I think that covers that. The National Building Regulations. I think the question was about the review that is being done. The department is working with various stakeholders to change the act because it's an old act. There are a number of problems with the act, including the fact that it's not clear whether government is required to comply with the act. Different sets of legal opinions they differ. Some say yes, government must comply. Some say no, government must not comply. And in that, because of that, you find that some of the structures that government build, especially the low income community, doesn't quite pass muster, which is a problem. So that's why we want to achieve that. And it's in the process with the department. There's one area, the role of the NRCS in IPAP. I think my colleague is going to
talk about that. Thank you, Dr. Dimani. I think from a policy point of view, we see NRCS as one of the institutions within the technical infrastructure that's supposed to assist us to facilitate trade and ensure that trade is fair. Edward has indicated, when we have a composite specification on a product, when manufacturers produce that product in the country, they ought to ensure that the process that they embed in their production factories meets the technical specifications. And therefore, it's important that when imports come into the country, they need the same level of specifications. Otherwise, we're going to end up with high-quality products produced by our own manufacturers, but competing against inferior products coming through importation. So hence, we talk about how do we ensure that we use this as a way of, one, protecting our market, secondly, protecting our manufacturing capabilities, but also how do we use this to facilitate access to markets. I mean, one of the things that has been talked about under the tripartite SPA on the African continent, how do we create a system that will enable free movement of goods across the countries? As you know, in many of the African countries, the technical infrastructure capacity is limited. Hence, the partnership with NRCS, the steps working with our African counterparts to create a system that can work for the African continent, so that we don't end up with different regulations that are going to be an impediment of movement of goods and services, so that we don't end up with artificial land barriers to trade being created because of the regulations. How do we harmonize the system so that we ensure that market access is facilitated under our trade negotiations? So we use the technical infrastructure as a key instrument of industrial policy. Hence, we pay the SWAM, or the technical infrastructure as a system, play a very critical role in our industrial policy action plan to ensure that the manufacturers, or it is the industries that we are creating or we are protecting, are enabling us to deliver other objectives, inclusive growth, we are able to create decent jobs. Because we can only create greater employment if we sustain our manufacturing capabilities and capacity.
Thank you very much.
Chair, I will answer the question where you requested 10 inspections where we have been successful and 10 where we are not. I'm actually going to just go to, in trying to answer.
I'll specifically to answer
in writing. Okay.
Yes. The reason why we have that is then we can capture it properly.
There was a question with regards to which bodies in SADC do we participate with, and I think the issue was we didn't answer it or we didn't address it. I think the most body that we participate in SADC, it has been addressed somewhere in the presentation. We mainly participate in the harmonization of the technical regulation within the different SADC countries.
Thank you. Let me just make some concluding remarks. Doc, I must disagree with you on the statement that you're making about cash. You're saying when it is sold, then it has been. That's not always true. Because we know that the grain part that we're talking of, yeah, and we have it with a whole range of other products. But the reason why I'm mentioning that is because just on Monday, the Food and Allied Workers Union marched on fake agricultural products. And one of them is cigarettes. And we have this legislation before us now that's meant to deal with cigarettes, but we also, our fiscal loses a lot of money. I know, as a smoker, you can buy a packet of cigarettes for 10 bucks. And the excise duty for cigarettes is 18 bucks. So these things have been so illegal. The interesting thing is that it doesn't come from outside of South Africa. It's manufactured here in South Africa. So we're not saying that you must look at it. I'm just using it as an example to say that up it could. The point that is raised by Honorable Ntlanga about the spaza shops, I think it's very important to do say two things about it. The one is, honorable members, when we pick up these things, or when our municipal councillors and whoever else pick up these things, give them the contact details of the National Consumer Commission. It's their responsibility. Right? What you could also do, you see, in order to get to make sure that you get the response, because they're very good, I've taken up things with them, and I'll give you one example now, where I communicate these things with Saroj, and then she takes it up with them on our behalf. Also, you need to be very clear what it is, that the action that you're proposing. There are these people that's offering you 5% interest on the loan.
Mm.
Now we know the rate is 6.5. How can they offer you 5%? I won't mention their name. And they send us this thing, you get it to your SMS,
mm.
and you get it on your email. So when I got it, I immediately communicated to Saroj, and I said, take it up with the National Credit Regulator. I have an email from the National Credit Regulator a week later to say that we are going to raise the deficit today. It was on the first day. They then came back to me to say that these people are liars.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and they do it with lots of people, but what they do, they tell you you pay 5%. That's what they say. But when you look at the actual amount, they'll say, we give you a loan of 10,000 Rand with 5% interest, but then they'll say, just hypothetically, you pay 24,000. You pay X amount per month. When you calculate it, it comes to 24,000 Rand that you pay on 10,000 Rand. And the interest, therefore, is not 5%. Yesterday, I've been talking to the colleagues in the meeting that we had yesterday from SA Tech. Now, you know what SA Tech is at? They sell, they fund taxi owners who want to buy taxis. And you see what's happening now, these taxis get burned, there's taxi fuels and things like that. And they are in trouble because you funded a vehicle, now the vehicle is no longer there. The person who's received that loan from you is unable to pay because where are they going to get the money from that as a result of income? Who do these people complain to? If you're a taxi driver, they need to complain to us. So I'm saying that we have a responsibility on that as well. And let's talk about that. If we can't give an answer, let's talk about it in the committee meeting. Okay, so that's our own thing. Also related to the marketing. Let us look at how we talk to our councillors. We have a meeting within a municipality, and then we communicate. I would prefer that we do it in a structured manner, via Saroj then again, to the appropriate entity in the DTI to say that we expect you to come and address this meeting at that time. The other thing that I want to say is about standards, that these people are not the only ones. Sometimes we have a tradition here, and I said to you last time, let's go look at that. But I went to one of the CSIRs, a major achievement that we've made. You know, your threat on any pilot used to be the threat as far from each other. Because of the fourth industrial revolution, the high areas of sophistication, the CSIR has now developed it where you have a finer threat. So you put through pipes and you thread them together. They stick. And I've seen it with a plastic, a PVC pipe used by the municipality in the Western. You know about the water leakages that we have. It's because they put the pipes together. Remember when we were at the farm last week, the blueberry farm? You looked at those pipes that they're putting together. A smaller pipe and a bigger pipe. Now, there's a way in which you can get threading on that. They can thread it together, particularly if there's high pressure on it. Now, those are the standards that they will then have to look at and say, but is this something that we can also support? Just the last one, comment that I want to make, is about the water, the electricity meters. Very soon, to the same group of people, we're going to have to approve the new IPT. Now, in the new IPT, if it is acceptable, I'm not saying what it's going to be. Say, for example, a private farm producing solar energy in Northern Cape wants to supply electricity
onto the grid, or they want to supply directly. I don't know how it's going to work to users. How are we going to guarantee that user that you are not exploiting? Right? I've just looked at my own accounts. You know we have a problem in Joburg Metro with accounts. I look at my accounts and how much they charge. And it's a sophisticated thing for the ordinary person to understand. But we have to make sure that that thing is properly calibrated so that our people are not overcharged. Because it can easily happen, particularly now that we're going to open up the energy market. With those comments, I then want to say that we appreciate very much. The conversation has been helpful. We are giving you the 14 days. You send those two things, the one on the inspections and the other one on the on the building thing, to Saroj, and she will then know how to do that. Thank you. You can excuse yourself, or you can stay with us if you want to. If you can. No, I can talk to you. You're not being fair. You've closed the session.
Okay.
End comment.
There's no problem, but I want to say something. Because they're saying everything that is on the court, I think so. Can you invite us and see how...
I'm not saying that. We can be invited. They're not saying everything is changed. Because I just raised the two examples to them about the grandpa, and I also used the example about the cigarette. Nothing. But that's not their responsibility, the pricing of the cigarette. So I'm saying that there are certain things that are not. No. They didn't say all of it was checked. They checked some of it. But you see, that's part of our oversight. I think, Honorable Dikhala, what you say, because also of the problems that we had with that, the South African Bureau of Standards, it is going to be important that when we do our oversight, we can even look at it when we take Parliament to the people in council, whether we can quickly copy at their offices, and then they take us to some of the stores to shop. I know there are some shops where they are selling goods that are produced in the East, and the quality of those goods is very low.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. They are looking, they are regulating the safety. If it's not something that relates to safety, they're not going to worry about it. If you have someone that is selling something that looks like coke, and it is not coke, they're not going to inspect that. Therefore, on top of the time, I'm saying they're not checking that. They said to us, it's mixing products where the safety of the user may be
Chair.
Yeah. You are
Chair.
Appreciated. Thank you very much.
That's fine. Compliment. If they come, they are submitting whatever they must submit. They must just comply that with the e statistics of your inspectors. The number of their inspectors, the statistics. In per provinces, because yes. I don't know, Chair, through you, Chair.
The commitment. Honourable members, can we do both those things that we need to do? The one is to look at the minutes of our last meeting. This time around, I have looked at the minutes. We have the minutes of the meeting of the 20th. That minute was okay, except for the fact that the amendment part of that minute was referring to amendments that were not done, and the amendment has subsequently been included. Can I say that the meeting was attended by, if we look at who's here, the Honorable Dikhale, the Honorable Pai, the Honorable Matule. The Honorable Matule has an apology. You were not there, sir. So
sorry, that's the meeting of the 20th of June. The 20th of June. You're right. Can you just mark honorable and put it in the minutes of today? No? The honorable Ketwa was present. Okay. Can I have a proposal then for the acceptance of that minute? Honorable High, seconded by
honorable
Dikala. What's the other set of minutes tonight?
It's the 8th.
8th of August. That's June. 8th of August was our last meeting.
Yeah.
Can I
move forward?
Draw your attention to those that were present. Mihale, Hai, Nakula, Makwebu. Again, your name is not there. Wonderful. Were you there?
I always be there, but I recognize it.
He was there.
Yeah, he was present.
But he was there.
Mm.
No, if he signed the register,
yeah, he was.
Look back up. Check, double check these things with the register. No, there's no evil in that. It was purely an
okay.
Thank you. Then we're done with the minutes.
No, I'm not done.
Honorable members.
I'm not done, Chair.
Sorry.
I'm not done, Chair.
Okay.
I don't know.
Use the mic, please, just so that we can hear you better.
I don't know, Chair, how do they capture these minutes? In maybe there's some categories of special members or what. Other members, they put whatever that they said. In our instance, for example, I never spoke about Nepal alone. I also questioned the issue of UWUTA, the World Trade Organization and the World Development Bank. In relating to the presentation that they presented, the free trade, which they presented, I questioned the three institutions in terms of their relations and their working progress. So yeah, I only see that they only mentioned around Nepal only issues and the charity program. So I was saying, can someone correct those minutes? If you write your minutes by saying who said what, therefore then you'll have to put whatever that I said as I said it. But if you say the House concluded on this or the House raised this, then it's something else. Thank you, Chair.
And Honorable Matibula, we've had conversations in this committee before about the minutes and what we put in and what we exclude from the minutes. We can give you minutes of 5 pages, or we can give you minutes of 2. My argument was that it's a minute. It's a smaller part. It doesn't cover it. I'm covered by that by the presence of CSG in particular. Because if you want the full set of the conversation, you can talk to CSG, they can send that to you. Because the problem that we're having, Honorable Ntlanga, has two elements. The one is, what do we capture in the minutes and what don't we capture? So we've agreed that it's not going to be possible to capture everything. That's one. The second thing, Honorable Ntlanga, is how do they put it? Do they say, Honorable Ntlanga says this, or do they say a person? And we've discussed it even in the management committee, where we said the minute you put a person's name, then we're going to have the problem that you raised. Why are you putting what Mapuwe said, but you don't put what I said?
But
and then we said, don't put the person's name. But they also, as secretaries, come together as a team with their managers where they look at how they put these things together. And what they said to us is that they have sent the template that they are trying to follow.
No.
So what, let me just conclude that. What I'm looking at when I look at the minutes is I'm saying, very important recommendation must be inside. The normal discussion, we don't need to put here. Precisely because we can get that from another.
Yeah. No, thank you, Chair. Chair, I should not be. My challenge is that, Chair, when you look at the minutes the way they are crafted, I was in that meeting, I know who said what. For example, I don't want actually to go into details who said what, but you can see the way they have been crafted that Nteta spoke and Ntoka spoke about this and this and this, and this is how it was been cleared. In my case, you only write NEPAD. I never spoke about NEPAD alone. I know what I spoke. That is what I'm trying to say. It must be clearly captured. If you are capturing what a person has said, then clearly capture what he has said. Don't choose what he has said and capture what you is most of your like and what you don't like. That will be wrong, Chair.
I'm going to treat you fairly.
Thank you, Chair.
Tell me, what formulation do you want to be included? You don't need to give it to me now. You can give it to Rebecca later. You can do it now, it's fine.
But, Chair, I don't think this is so much difficult. Chair, they were able to write at your bullet number 3.7 part of what I said. Okay? Now, my question is, what about the World Trade Organization? Because it is related to this matter. What about the Development Bank issues that I have raised? Because they are also related to this matter. That is what I'm trying to say, Chair.
Okay. With that, we'll accommodate that amendment. Rebecca will include it in the minutes of the debate.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
You are free, if you feel that you have a strong point, to correct the minutes. That's why we sent it to you before. Okay. Honourable members, the last matter that we have here is last week I drew your attention to this MIMUS, the MOU. That I received from the chairman
of the NCOP. And I am still trying to clarify with the Honorable Nyambi how exactly we deal with this. I checked with Honorable Pakis, and he says if I ask him to ATC, he will make sure that it's ATC. And then I can present a report to the House. But that has got to come from the committee. Now, I'm not going to pain you with it now. I'm seeking guidance. That it's about 15 MOUs that we have. One example thereof is South Africa has engaged in an MOU with the United Arab Emirates. No detail. South Africa has engaged in an MOU with the Republic of Tanzania. It doesn't go into detail. Now, I can then just, if you want me to do it in that way, take to the House and say these are the MOUs, and it's all related to them. Or what I was thinking is that if you look at our program, Durko is coming to us within another month from now, huh? Then I can ask Durko then when they do their presentation to us to do a presentation on this. But then we're going to miss out on what we have for Durko to present to us now. Because, you know, our program is going to be very tight. I notice you shaking your head. And I would say, because I looked at the Constitution, paragraph 2316 of the Constitution states that the executive has the prerogative to engage in this. So we can't change anything.
Right.
So why are we going to bother?
That's what we're going
to look at. As a committee. What about that?
I think the best policy step that we will need to be clarified on is whether we need to ratify this MOU for the IATA for information. Then if they ask us for information, I think we should ask for acceptance. But then if we need to ratify them, then I would suggest that perhaps we either create a space in the program for the echo to come and present all of the upcoming MOUs, perhaps with their external keynote, and then we ratify. But if they ask us for information, we should ask for acceptance.
I hope you catch it.
Hey, Mr. President. We can follow up on what Honorable High Chancellor said right now. That when we receive this, normally it will be two, three things. Like, for example, for information, we are just informed.
No.
For consideration and record.
Mm.
So it means that one, it will be ECP, Genesis, and like the one who will be, you know, last week. I mean, if we go to the ECP, then we program it in the community benefit so that it can go to the house. But then it's then it's not in the ECP, it's not, you know, forwarded to the ECP. It means that every committee is just for information.
No, you're not helping. Let me read to you just the first paragraph of the memo that I got from Honorable Madisa. It says, kindly be informed for that information.
Mm.
That the following papers have been referred to the Select Committee Trade and International Relations for consideration.
Huh?
Mm. If it says for consideration, it means that we must react. We can't just take this information. Now, let me show you on the moment. Here it is. There is 14, and it comes to this is it. It's three pages. I can read this to the house anytime. But now, why I was saying to back, I must capture it, because Honorable Chai is capturing my dilemma. Where I'm saying, I don't know whether I must present it to you for approval, or if it is ATC, and Honorable Chai says that, check it. If it needs to be ATC, bring it to us. If not, then I will deal with it differently, where we can just give a copy of this one of the information. Just three pages.
Thank you, Chair. I think I will support Honorable High. Reasons are, Chair, if the 14 of them had to be 86, obviously they had to be admitted by the committee and be acknowledged by the committee. Then they then get 86. I think Honorable High was proper to say, let's get these guys from the ECO who can then clarify. If these are to be ratified or are for the noting them. In that way, then we can take a proper decision. But for us now to say no, do whatever that you can, it will not be good. It will be precisely correct to say let's take the highest option as a correct option for now. Thank you, Jim.
Can I just be a little bit more transparent and just take some of them? The one is an MOU with the government of Guinea, which is the implementation of a project to improve the sustainable management of waste in the city of Kwame.
Not ratified.
The second one is an MOU with the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic on diplomatic consultations in terms of Section 2313 of our Constitution. The next one is an MOU with the Republic of Sahrawi concerning a financial contribution towards the Constitution of the Sports Development
Committee. Ratification.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, let me go, there's two more. The 12th one is a memorandum of understanding on political consultation between the government of South Africa and the government of the state of Kansas. The ANC is doing it. Let us do it as some The final one that I want to put to you is an MOU of understanding between the government of South Africa and the government of the Republic of Madagascar on regular diplomatic consultations.
Certification.
And cooperation.
Wow, what ratification?
Parliamentary Monitoring Group, this is section of the Constitution. I think I quoted the wrong section earlier on. It's section 231 in bracket 3 of our Constitution. 231.3. I think I said 232. Hold on, fine. Then we can
I want to suggest that for now, let's move to consult, because we are unable now to make the decision until we are advised. So I suggest that we consult and then come back to the committee and have some of your consultations. Because my worry is that there could be a possibility that every day there are these memorandums. We are dealing with hundreds of them. Now, if you mean that you will have to call DECO every night, second week to come and, so that's why I'm suggesting that before we even decide whether we will consider them in the community or we will receive them with information, I suggest that you, for now, we give you that possibility to consult and then advise us accordingly.
Thank you very much. It is not for lack of trying. I tried to call both Honorable Mohai and the first chair, and then
the committee one is attend.